Welcome to Accelerating Operational Performance. I'm Greg Schenkel, President of Unique Training and Development and Frontline Leadership Systems. And we're here for another great episode. This one is brought to you by our new Site Leader Development Program, SLDP, because you always need a good acronym. And what it is a new plant manager training program that we're doing for some of our clients in recognition that plant managers need to do an even better job of holding people accountable and getting people to be empowered to take care of running the business on a daily basis so that the plant manager can focus on higher value tasks. That's the new Site Leader Development Program. And of course, you can reach out to us at uniquedevelopment.com. Today's guest is someone who I've known and done business with for quite some time, but I always like to do the guest the proper justice, so I have a great intro that I want to read. Our guest today is Reeve Southam, and Reeve comes from a company called Doosan Bobcat. Now, Doosan isn't a name that maybe people understand on a regular basis, but Bobcat is those little excavator bulldozers that you see. They're kind of like mini versions. I've always thought it would be cool to have one. I haven't asked Reeve to pay us in a Bobcat tractor, but you know that would be something that I'd find kind of cool. So Reeve is one of our clients at Doosan, and he's had a variety of different positions in manufacturing organizations over his career. His roles have centered around things like process improvement, innovation, talent management, and learning and development, which is why we are working together quite a bit in our work with Doosan Bobcat. Right now, he is the Director of Talent Management and Training at Doosan Bobcat. He has his BA in History from Brigham Young University and a Master's of Organizational Development from Bowling Green State University. He brings a unique perspective to operational excellence, allowing him to see improvement opportunities from a human-centered perspective. I'm excited to hear, of course, what he wants to share with us about how to optimize processes, how to develop people to do better in their roles. Reeve, it's just great to have you here.
Greg, it's great to be here. Thanks so much.
Yeah. And of course, if people want to buy a Doosan Bobcat excavator, of course, there's lots of dealer networks, but the website is doosanbobcat.com. And Reeve Southam can be, of course, found on LinkedIn. So, Reeve, this is going to be a bit different because you are a learning and development specialist. That's where a lot of your current work is, although you've got a really diverse background. I'm just curious. I think people need to know, like, you probably didn't start off as a kid saying, I want to be a learning and development or organizational development specialist. What's been your journey to the role that you have now?
Great question. You know, as a kid, I wanted to be a jet fighter pilot. So this is a big divergence, right? But eyesight has something to do with that. And you can't tell, but I have contacts in. And my timing was all bad for that. But I found myself with a history degree on my way to law school and a father who was an attorney who said, you don't want to be an attorney, which blew that plan out of the water. So, you know, the story of my career is pivot and adjust. And so I looked at my strengths and realized I had a lot of strengths in systems thinking and I had a lot of strengths in understanding human behavior. And found myself at Bowling Green State University in Ohio in their master's program for org development. And the beauty of going there is it's smack dab in the middle of automotive country. Ohio is big time manufacturing.
For sure.
There are lots of first and second tier suppliers to automotive. And of course, right up the road is Detroit and Dearborn.
Yeah.
So we found ourselves, my wife and I, out there with lots of opportunity to learn a lot about manufacturing improvement. And upon leaving school, landed my first job with a large appliance manufacturer that's based out of Michigan.
Okay.
I'm sure many of your listeners can fill in the blanks, but it was a great opportunity to begin down that path of learning and development and org development.
Awesome. So the people side of it, when did that move, or was that something that you actually discovered early on in your career? I'm just curious how you moved from either an operations role or administrative role into focusing more in learning and development? Or is that because you did your education there, that's the role you entered into right away?
So I joke that I was hired to witness the elimination of teams on the line. I'll probably share with you. Yeah. I went out and I documented the reason why teams weren't being effective on our assembly lines. in an attempt to hopefully correct that. And in the process, spent a lot of time doing group facilitation in front of our line employees, in front of our management employees, and that then transitioned into building context for change, telling stories. Why is this happening? What do we need to do there? And then turning that into, now that we know what we need to do, how do we carry it out? And that evolved into some training roles, which then opened some doors for lean implementation and working out on the line for quite some time.
Ooh, awesome, awesome. Probably people don't, I mean, people would assume that somebody who's in a leadership or learning and development role spends a lot of time doing workshops. What are the, well, I mean, my question to you is really what's the best part of your job, but what are the different facets of your job? Because you're not, like, we're mostly in the delivery of training in our company, so we're doing a lot of workshops. But I'm thinking in your role, you might do some of that, but there's way more to it than that. What are the different aspects of your job?
The role is fairly strategic at this point. And you introduced me as the director of talent management training. And actually, in the last few years, I've taken on a senior management role specifically in learning and development for Doosan Bobcat. And it's really neat to specialize there because it allows you to get laser focused. And so what I'm really focused on is the daily delivery of the programs that make a difference in our professional workforce. And so there's a lot of activity around understanding need, capacity, vendor management. There's a lot of strategy around how you structure your business and working with people like your company, and how we have those contracts in place and deliver the content there. And then there's a whole piece around it of follow-up and measuring for impact. Do these programs bear fruit? And if they do, how do we propagate them further? And if they don't, what should we replace them with to make the difference we're looking for? And so yes, there is some facilitation, which honestly, I really enjoy. That's my bread and butter, but it's not where I get to spend most of my time. Most of my time now is in planning and coordination, logistics management, and truly leading the business of learning in my part of the business.
Nice. And well, and what I like is what you're saying, and I know you and I've had some conversations about that, that more and more learning and development needs to be up seen as a partner and be a partner in the business and helping it perform better. What
Yes.
was it? What was a key learning that you got from an L&D type initiative that, might have gone, I'm open to both stories, like something that went really well that you had as like a big win. And maybe one that didn't go as well, or maybe the story you'll share is actually a little bit of both.
Actually, I have a good example of each. Early in my career, I really saw myself as being the expert at most things I touched. And so when I was helping out with some lean implementation and we were specifically looking at line balancing, we would do kind of a 3-4 day event where we bring employees in and we'd teach them how to use stopwatches and we'd do standard work combination sheets and we'd go out and we'd observe process. And the goal in this one instance was to we needed to free up some labor for other places on the line. Labor wasn't going out the door. We just simply needed to hire less temps on a daily basis. And so we needed to cut 50% out of this one work area and get some space back. And we beat our heads against the wall for 3 days, thinking that we were pros and could answer that question. And the reality was we could not. And I was standing out next to the line, having gone back through our PowerPoint slides and our materials and applying all the principles that we taught our team. Frustrated, knowing we were going to turn in a null result, and a gentleman walked up to us. He was a line lead. He knew every position in that section of the line and gave breaks to people and helped supply them with parts. And he said, "What are you guys trying to do? I heard you're trying to get some labor and some space." And I said, "Yeah." He goes, "Well, tell me where." And I pointed and I explained. He goes, "Oh, that's easy. Just do this, this, and this. Give me three guys to move some stuff, and we'll have it done in 10 minutes."
Oh
And he
my.
did. He had it done in 10 minutes.
Oh
And
my.
it was just it was such a it was a bolt of lightning, both to my ego and to my understanding of you don't know as much as you think you do, and the people who are experts are the ones doing this work. So despite all your tools and all your charisma and all your good stories and training materials, these are the folks that are really creating the value for the company. And that really flipped a switch for me at that moment.
And I bet you've I bet you've carried that ever since, right? Because
it's really a foundational principle: is the experts are the ones doing it.
That's actually why you know, recently I reached out, and I understand that I will do a visit there, even though we've done training with your supervisors before. I've just found that, and maybe I fall in the same trap, as especially 3 decades in. Oh, I don't need to go and see another factory. I don't need to go and see another warehouse. You know, you've seen one factory or warehouse, you've seen them all. And then I realized, no. Actually, there's 2 reasons why you go and spend time with people. It's one is to try to get into their reality, which is like, what is the actual flow? So that if I'm going to add value, I know, I don't tell you how I could add value. I just find out what you're doing and then discover how to add value. So it's more seamless. And we're thinking that'll be the better way than just to say, we have this great system and just try to push it in. So it sounds like you had the same awakening. I think I cut you off before you were going to go into, you know, what a success was, although that turned into a success.
Well, it did, but exactly what you were just talking about, which is going and seeing and understanding before prescribing. We were charged with putting a new product into production, and we built a whole new assembly line, and we had the product team come down from our corporate offices. This is a former employer. And they said, okay, so you're going to develop the training to teach the employees how to build this machine. And so we walked through the build process and the expectations for each position on the line. And I realized if I didn't ask some intelligent questions, we probably were going to miss some opportunities. And I also knew that the questions would be better coming from other people than me. And so I actually invited some of the workers who are going to be doing the work to come in and to look at this process. And they asked the questions probably more directly than I would have, but they said, are you serious? You expect me to stick my head inside a steel cabinet while it's moving at this speed on the line? That's dangerous. Oh. Or are you kidding me? You expect me to tighten this many fittings in this period of time? Aren't you worried about carpal tunnel?
Oh, wow.
And so what it became was a change in focus from how are we going to train this to a discussion with the design engineers of how are we going to manufacture this product in a safe, quality, and efficient way at the rate that we need for our customers. And it resulted in a redesign that saved several $1 million and resulted in a launch that hit all its numbers.
Wow.
It was really amazing to watch.
That's good.
And so that's where the learning was, is it's not just about training. Sometimes the questions we ask take us in different directions, and we shouldn't be afraid to explore those, and we should be humble enough to accept that the answers are probably out there for us to find.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. I guess I'm even though I've been doing this for a while, I'm sort of on a rediscovery of like what is the reality of the leaders and how to come alongside them to help. So you've kind of actually already bridged on the next question, which is really around, you know, you've had a lot of work in operational improvement and process improvement. When you look at it from an L&D perspective, even though your story just illustrated it, I think, quite well, is what is this link in fostering continuous improvement, you know, including from an L&D perspective?
You know, I think as an L&D leader, the opportunity that I have, or that we as a community have, is to, one, understand our business. We're a business person first. We're an L&D professional second. And part of the value that we can bring is helping then our learners understand the business, because as they develop that competency around who the customer is and how we add value and what that value looks like when it's delivered, they then are empowered to have impact.
Yeah.
You know, it gives the context for the work that they do on a daily basis, whether they're a plant leader or they're a welder. You know, as long as we can see the big picture, we can understand how we fit into it. And so then I think the second part of that is very often in learning, we're charged with teaching tools or teaching processes. If we can tell the story that the tool or the process fits into, that gives people the context to begin to apply it. And I think with that context, the final thing is we can advocate for permission, clear roles and responsibilities, so that people know when. You know, when to do it or when not to do it. And so I really see that as the role of learning and development, is to clarify those questions for people so that we take away the uncertainty to the application of what they've learned.
Yeah. No, so many things actually come to mind after hearing your answer to that is We just finished teaching a cohort through our site leader development program, which is for plant managers. And one of the quotes from my colleague Jason McKenzie, who's been a guest on the podcast and is also one of our trainers, he said, "Really, a manager's role is to consistently remove ambiguity, and create create greater certainty and clarification of expectations," which fits in with what you're saying. The other thing that crosses my mind is, almost all businesses, and especially all manufacturing businesses, are essentially conversion operations, right? You're taking materials and various parts and supplies, you're adding some labor and know-how and capital equipment, and you're converting it into a sellable product. I would say that learning and development, even from what you're saying, is also a conversion business in a way. And that is just that you're taking some talent, some innate abilities. You have a need for an output for helping the business be successful. And if you really do it well, both happen, like the person develops and grows and the business reaps the benefit from that. And you've essentially sort of upgraded someone's future and the value that they can bring through the learning and development process.
I have a tagline that it's not official or anything, but I often think about our role as preparing people for what's next.
Yeah.
Whether that's what's in the next hour or what's next in their career.
So to that, and another one of our guests talked about, because I'm sure in your role you're also involved in succession planning and you know, essentially evaluating people's performance and potential, right? And we talk about high potentials. And what I liked about him is he said, you know, the problem is that we often will look at promoting someone based on their performance in their current role. It is an indicator maybe that they could perform in a different role. But he says, really what we're called to do in thinking about someone's potential is it's really their potential to deliver results at an even higher level. And maybe one, two, or even three levels higher, we see their ability to perhaps know how to do that. And it's sort of, I thought, it sounds like fairly basic, but what struck me is, it's not just that you've crushed it on your current role. It's that the way that you've done it gives us some hope that if we put you into a role with even more responsibility or different responsibility, you can probably repeat your successes again.
Well, and that's such a critical understanding, because so often we promote people for the success they've attained using current processes or using success that's only been at the level of performance they've demonstrated. Yeah. And then we scratch our heads and wonder, why aren't they succeeding at this promotion? And so getting a look, in a sense, into how will they perform at the more strategic or the more dynamic or the more higher expectation level is so key to making sure they succeed.
So to expand on that a little bit more, you know, talent management is obviously a key part of your role. It's in your job title. What are some of your insights, although you've just shared them with your answer just now, but what are your insights on developing, I guess, both the leaders, but also the skilled workers that the business needs, essentially, in the context of things changing and evolving and new technology and new automation?
So, you know, I think the fear out there is that automation will make us obsolete, right? Mm-hmm. Or that it will diminish the differentiation between people. And really, when we look at talent, there are three things that I think are really important to consider. And this isn't an original model. We've seen it in various places. But when we look at talent, whether it's shop floor level or it's leadership level, looking at aptitude or ability is key. So does the person have the ability to do what we're going to expect them to do? Do they have the aptitude to continue to grow? The next is really, are they engaged? Do they want to be part of the business, part of our organization? Are they excited about showing up every day and excited about the opportunity that it might represent? And then third is, do they have the aspiration to take on a significantly higher role? And where those three things meet is where you see your high potential talent. If you have aspiration and aptitude but not engagement, you're basically training somebody else's leader.
That's
They're going to
true.
Leave.
Yeah,
you know,
good point.
And and if you have engagement and aptitude, but you don't have aspiration, you have someone who's not really happy climbing the chain. They don't want that. They're happy where they're at, you know. And similar, if you have aspiration and engagement but not aptitude, you run into the Peter principle pretty quick. You promote them beyond their level of competence.
Yeah.
And so I think we have to look at the whole person and understand: is this going to be a good fit? And if so, then we invest.
Yeah.
you know, and we sync that development into them. So
Well,
from a,
and even just
yeah.
that, but even just that assessment, I know you're a fan of models as I am. It's like you can picture the Venn diagram of those
Yeah.
elements interacting with each other. And I'd say part of development, well, we always think of development as being the either the job assignments, the projects, or the training that we might expose someone to, you know, as they build up these skills. But development is even the process. Maybe it's like a property developer in some ways. It's like you see a piece of land and you see, you know, the growth of a city or community, and you start to dream about something that it could be. It's something I've never had a talent for, but some people can look at a piece of land, some people can look at a person, and they can see what that person could become. And somebody has to see it. I was just interviewing a plant manager as another episode of the podcast, and he said someone saw in him the potential before he saw it in himself to, you know, get to become a production manager and eventually a plant manager. And so I'm thinking the same thing from what you're saying is that it's not that we have to wait till all the flashing lights say this person is a good candidate. We actually have to be active in our in the evaluation, the assessment, the discussions about it, because not everyone even might have an aspiration because they never even thought of that as being an aspiration. But somebody has to have the conversation about this is the possibility for you if you're interested. And maybe the person's still hesitant. You go, I think it would be worth you giving it a try. We're here to support you and develop you. Would you be willing to do that? And many leaders have been nudged at least into their leadership roles because they didn't see in themselves the desire for it. And then once they get a taste for it, they succeed. I think that's a bit of what you're saying is it's a sort of a holistic process of these three elements.
Absolutely. Yep. That's a good summary.
Moving on to just culture. And the culture is like a big word. We could probably do a day and a half on that. But I'm wondering about, you know, your view of culture and manufacturing's ability in terms of, you know, moving forward. Do you have any insights on how you view culture and creating it, nurturing it, that sort of thing?
Well, you know, I think in operations, culture gets a bad rap sometimes because people think that's a squishy term. And in operations, we're usually dealing with hard data-driven things, right? And a learning culture or an adaptive culture doesn't necessarily mean a classroom or an office culture. And so I think that's one of the things we have to kind of get clear in our head is culture exists, whether we like it to or not. Where we can have an impact is influencing what the culture becomes. And so in an operations-driven organization, there's a tendency to focus on those attributes of getting products out the door. And the challenge with that is we have to take into account the inputs to getting those products out the door. And very often there's a human side to that. We're not quite at Elon Musk's vision of robot-run factories. And so we have these soft, squishy things working in our hard space, and our culture has to accommodate those. Now, I'm not saying there's one universal way to do that, but leaders have to learn to be skilled at interacting with the people in their work environments, just as they need to learn to be skilled about reading financials and maintaining equipment and planning capacities, looking at sourcing contracts. And so, we can't say there's that culture is not important, obviously, and we can't say that there's one, you know, one supreme culture that would rule in an operations environment. Every group is different. Everyone comes from a different background based on who they recruit or where their business has grown up. I'm based out of North Dakota, and there are some very specific cultural impacts as to how this business was formed and who originally settled in the area. They are linked very closely. And that's very different from cultures and businesses I worked at in Ohio and in other places. And so understanding those unique attributes is so important. But I think in my mind, culture doesn't exist without people. So we have to understand what do we need our people to do and how do we need to treat them and then influence in that way. And probably the biggest thing is people need to feel engaged and valued, whatever that looks like in your business. If they can get those things down, you're going to move forward.
Agreed. So, yesterday I just thought of, you know, because we were talking culture with these plant managers, and I thought of culture in a petri dish almost, which is sort of weird and gross maybe in some ways, but it's like So that culture is a moving organism. If you add a toxin, you can kill the culture, right? But the other thing is, the culture is not something static, or that it's a destination that you get to, as much as it is, it's just shaping and moving. And like you said, it's the roots of it. I'm almost thinking of like a sourdough starter, where it's like that's been there for a long time. There's some roots to this thing that are important to acknowledge, and also how we morph it and nurture it going forward. But even what you said around the leadership influence is really to be a nudger sometimes a pruner and just a fertilizer. Like you're just trying to see if you can get this thing to evolve so that it continues to be relevant. And you know, a lot of people will simplify culture and just say it's like the unwritten rules of what it takes to fit in a business. But that implies that you have some conscious thought about, I think, some of that. So. Yep. I'm wondering, although we've covered a lot of ground related to, you know, continuous improvement, accelerating operational performance, leadership. Is there anything else that you thought would be worth discussing with our audience that they might value, or a key insight that you've gained that we haven't talked about already?
You know, there are two things that I think are really important. One goes way back to that first project I was hired for a long time ago in Ohio, which was the death of teams on the shop floor. And ultimately, when we really tried to understand what happened, what killed off a multi-million dollar investment in self-directed work teams on an assembly line was lack of structure. And I think it's so important that when we're talking about learning and development, we're talking about culture, we're talking about all these human-based things, we need to understand that we live in a system and we work in a system, and we can't just use one lever to create success. We have to look at the impact on the whole, and we have to look at those things that might weaken us on the whole. And in this case, it was supervision had been removed from the line, and power had been given to people to direct their work on a daily basis, but no structure had been given around how to use that power. And so people were immobilized by fear and by ambiguity, so they didn't do anything.
Yeah.
And so back to your comment about leadership is about removing ambiguity. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And we failed as leaders in that case. I think the other thing that really comes to mind, just that kind of sums it all up, is if we have trouble measuring it, we should probably question, are we doing the right thing? You know, and so as hard as it can be sometimes to determine good metrics to look at the impact of what we're doing in learning and development initiatives, it's really incumbent upon us as stewards of the business to figure out how to measure the impact on our business of what we're doing, because we're being trusted with resources and we need to show a return.
Well, I love that, actually. Well, not actually. I mean, that would imply that I don't love it most of the time. But the idea of measuring, I think we become complicit in saying, well, you know, there's some intangible benefits. It's like, well, that's okay while you have, you know, extra resources sloshing around to make some investments that you can't measure. You know, though, that the best thing for everyone is that you can see what the impact is in some tangible way, even if it's not an absolute cause and effect, but there's certainly these factors that influence this outcome. So I'm in agreement with you on that. So I know our audience has probably got a lot out of our discussion already. So Reeve is a client of ours at Dusan Bobcat. Of course, you can connect with Reeve through LinkedIn, Reeve Southam. And Dusan Bobcat, of course, is a manufacturer of those really cool little excavators and bulldozers that you see. And a tremendous company with a tremendous culture. And I look forward to coming out to North Dakota for a visit, hopefully during the summer months. I know that your winter
That's
was
the best
a little,
time.
Yeah, exactly. So Reeve, thank you so much for being on the podcast. We really appreciate it.
Thanks, Greg.
So again, as one of our viewers or listeners, one of the challenges, I hope you're a fan of the podcast. If you are, you know, the challenge for anything is breaking through the noise. And one of the ways you do that is by making recommendations to others. You can do that either by sending the podcast, usually forwarding it to a friend or a colleague or within your organization. Or, of course, old-fashioned way is to go, even though it's a bit of a hassle, go in, leave a review, give the four or five-star review. Those things help the algorithm present it to others. And I hope that you're also getting a sense through the vibe that almost all of our business relationships start with a conversation. And so the best way to do that is, of course, reach out to us through our website at uniquedevelopment.com. And if we can be of any benefit to you or your organization and your development, that's what we're here for. That's our mission in life. We want to have more great leaders leading great businesses and organizations. So if there's any way that we can help you, please reach out. For now, I'll just say best wishes for success on your leadership journey.